So think about this for a second. Donald Trump carried Texas by a massive, I mean really massive, 13.7 percentage points in 2024.
Yeah, that is a huge margin.
Right. And a Democrat hasn't won a statewide election there since 1994. So by all conventional metrics of political gravity, you know, that is a solid, impenetrable red wall.
Completely impenetrable. Or, well, so you would think.
Exactly. Yet here we are. It's August of 2026. And the top political forecasters in the country outfits, like the Cook Political Report and Sabatoz's Crystal Ball, they have completely shifted their ratings.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They are calling the 2026 Texas U.S. Senate race a dead heat, a toss-up.
It completely upends the structural certainty we have seen in that state for, what, 3 decades?
Literally 3 decades.
Finding a competitive statewide race in Texas right now is, it's like finding a blue pixel in a completely red television screen. It just demands an explanation.
And that's exactly what we're going to do today on this deep dive. We've got our hands on a massive, highly detailed analytical report.
Oh, this report is incredibly dense.
Very. It was published on August 28th, 2026 by the American newspaper and American TV. And it breaks down the exact mechanics of this Senate matchup between the Democratic challenger James Tallarico and the Republican incumbent Ken Paxton.
Right.
So our mission today for you listening is to figure out if Tallarico is a genuine structural threat to end this decades-long Democratic losing streak.
Or if, you know, this is just a temporary blip caused by a uniquely vulnerable opponent.
Exactly. And before we really jump in, because we're unpacking a highly polarized race today, we want to be super clear with you up front.
Yeah, this is important. We aren't picking sides here.
At all.
We're not endorsing any of these platforms, left or right. We are strictly here to break down the raw data and the really fascinating political chess match happening behind the scenes.
Right. We're examining the mechanics of the strategies, not validating the politics. So looking at the raw data, the sheer asymmetry of this race just jumps right off the page.
It really does. The candidates themselves are a complete odd couple.
Totally. And the gap in their campaign bank accounts is historically massive. I mean, on the Democratic side, you have James Tallarico. He's a former middle school teacher, and he's currently a Texan House member representing part of Travis County.
And he basically cruised through his primary, right?
He did, won it outright.
Yeah.
But on the Republican side, you have the incumbent, Attorney General Ken Paxton. And Paxton's path was just completely different.
Oh, it was a gauntlet. He barely survived a brutal primary and runoff against John Cornyn.
Right.
He's essentially dragged across the finish line by an 11th-hour endorsement from Donald Trump.
And that bruising primary, I mean, that is the direct catalyst for where the polling stands today.
Yeah, the report notes an unweighted average of 6 summer polls, meaning you know, this is the raw data before pollsters apply their own subjective turnout models.
Right, just the raw numbers.
Exactly. And it shows Tallarico leading by 2.8 points. That's 46.8% to 44.0%.
Which is wild for a Democrat in Texas. But the polling lead almost feels, I don't know, secondary to the financial disparity here.
The money is just staggering.
It is. Looking at the Federal Election Commission data through June 30th, Tallarico brought in roughly $68.6 million in receipts.
Wayne Paxton.
Paxton had $9.25 million.
Wow.
Yeah. And by August 20th, Tallarico had already dropped $25 million on general election television and digital ads across the state.
$25 million.
Yep. And Paxton, he had spent about $119,000 directly.
That is, I mean, that's barely a drop in the bucket.
Right. In a state with multiple massive media markets like Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, a 25-to-1 spending advantage in the summer just means Tallarico is the only one talking.
He essentially had a monopoly on the statewide narrative for 3 solid months.
Exactly. It's like a football team playing without a salary cap against a team that, you know, can barely afford to keep the stadium lights on.
That's a great way to put it.
But I have to push back a little, right? Because I wonder if this is just an artificial sugar high. I mean, you cannot just buy a state as fundamentally conservative as Texas.
No, you really can't.
At some point, the partisan baseline has to kick in. So is Tallarico actually persuading voters, or is he just capitalizing on a massive temporary financial vacuum on the right?
Well, it's largely the financial vacuum, but we have to understand the mechanics of why that vacuum even exists.
Okay, why is it there?
Paxton is uniquely vulnerable. His 2023 impeachment and his long history of legal battles, they didn't just generate bad headlines.
Right.
They actively alienated the moderate, deep-pocketed Republican donor class.
Ah, I see.
During the primary, groups aligned with John Cornyn spent tens of millions of dollars entirely focused on tearing Paxton down.
Wow, tens of millions just against their own guy.
Exactly. They effectively handed the Democrats a fully funded, fully tested opposition research campaign.
Right, on a silver platter.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So Paxton is struggling to raise money now because a significant chunk of traditional Republican donors simply closed their checkbooks to him.
So the very infrastructure that usually defends a Texas Republican was actively attacking him just a few months ago. That makes total sense. But, I mean, a freeze on donor cash never lasts forever in a Senate race with national implications.
Right. It doesn't. And the cavalry is already starting to arrive.
Yeah.
The report points out a recent $1.7 million television buy from a super PAC, one of those independent expenditure groups allied with Senator Ted Cruz.
Okay, so the outside money is stepping in.
Right. So while Tallarico has enjoyed uncontested airspace all summer, national Republican rescue operations are beginning to spin up. The spending gap will absolutely close.
And if the spending gap closes, money alone won't save Tallarico. He's going to need a message that actually transcends the traditional Democratic brand, or he's just going to hit the exact same red wall everyone else has since the 90s.
Exactly.
The obvious parallel here is Beto O'Rourke's massive run back in 2018.
Right, Beto.
Because Beto had the money, he had the viral moments, he visited literally every county, but he still lost.
He did.
But Tallarico seems to be running what the report calls a modified Beto model.
Yeah, he is heavily borrowing from that 2018 playbook. He's utilizing the viral digital media strategy, the relentless statewide travel, and he's leveraging a massive small-dollar fundraising apparatus.
But there's a twist.
There is. Where the original Beto model relied heavily on sheer charisma and a somewhat, you know, ideological progressive energy.
Right.
Tallarico is engineering a deliberate permission structure for cross-party voting.
Okay, that concept of a permission structure is fascinating. It implies that there are voters who want to jump ship, but they need a psychological justification to do it without feeling like they are betraying their identity.
Exactly. I mean, voting is deeply tied to identity.
Oh, absolutely.
To change someone's vote, you have to reduce the cognitive dissonance they feel when crossing party lines. So Tallarico's strategy relies on 10 core pillars, but the foundation is an intense focus on kitchen table affordability.
Just everyday costs.
Right. He is hammering the costs of housing, groceries, and wages, and framing it all through a populist lens of working people versus billionaire mega donors.
So he's deliberately moving the conversation away from, like, abstract national culture wars and grounding it in the localized cost of living.
Exactly.
And he's wrapping that economic message in a very specific personal narrative. The report really emphasizes his background as a public school teacher, but more notably, his faith.
Yes, his faith is a huge part of this.
He openly identifies as a Presbyterian seminarian and uses faith-based language in all his messaging. But, you know, looking at the crosstabs, the demographic breakdowns within these polls, frequent churchgoers still heavily favor Paxton.
Right, they do.
So it sounds like he's trying to pick the lock on the conservative coalition using their own keys. But will frequent churchgoers actually cross party lines for a Democrat just because he uses faith language? The seminarian angle doesn't seem like it's actually converting the evangelical conservative base.
Well, it isn't converting the hardcore base, but that isn't the actual utility of the strategy.
It's not.
No. The goal of leaning into his faith and his background as a teacher isn't to win the evangelical vote outright. It's to lower cultural suspicion.
Cultural suspicion. So by combining concrete, somewhat boring economic issues like grid reliability or property taxes with a culturally familiar Christian persona,
he avoids triggering the far left alarm bells.
Precisely.
In Texas, the National Democratic brand carries a really heavy penalty. A lot of moderate voters instinctively associate it with coastal progressivism.
Right. They just write it off immediately.
Exactly. But Tallarico doesn't need a diehard social conservative to suddenly embrace a progressive platform. He just needs to project enough cultural safety that a moderate Republican, specifically someone who voted for John Cornyn in the primary and is already just exhausted by Paxton's controversies.
Yeah, they're just tired of the drama.
Exactly. He needs them to feel comfortable making the leap.
It gives that Cornyn voter an out. They can look at their ballot and say, you know, I really can't stomach voting for Paxton. And this Democrat seems like a reasonable, church-going guy who just wants to fix the power grid. And honestly, even if that permission structure doesn't convince them to vote for Tallarico, it might just convince them to leave the Senate portion of the ballot blank.
Which is huge. Either way, it deprives Paxton of a vote he structurally relies on.
Right.
Which is why margin management is so crucial here. It is entirely about reducing the friction of defection. Tallarico is meticulously building a bridge for disaffected Republicans to cross over.
But if Tallarico is spending millions building this psychological bridge for moderates, Paxton's obvious countermove has to be, well, blowing that bridge up before November.
Oh, absolutely.
Because Paxton holds the ultimate structural advantage, the gravitational pull of the Texas Republican baseline.
Yeah.
If he can just get Republicans to vote like Republicans, he wins.
And his strategy for doing that is brutally efficient.
Tell me about it.
He doesn't need to rehabilitate his own image. He doesn't need to convince moderate Republicans that he's a flawless public servant. He just needs to nationalize the race.
So he brings it all back to the national level.
Yes. He has to completely collapse Tallarico's highly customized, localized brand back into the generic national Democratic brand.
Because the math is undeniable. When Donald Trump is winning the state by almost 14 points and Ted Cruz won his last race by 8.5, a generic Republican beats a generic Democrat 10 times out of 10.
Every single time.
It's like Paxton has this massive magnetic default setting at his disposal. He just has to turn on the giant magnet of partisan identity and wait for all those stray metal shavings, the voters who wandered toward Tallarico, to violently snap back into their usual red formation.
That is a perfect analogy. And the mechanism he's using to turn on that magnet relies on what political scientists call identity shortcuts.
Identity shortcuts.
Yes. The source details how Paxton is systematically attacking Tallarico on border security, immigration, crime, and guns. He is forcefully slapping him with the far left label.
Which bypasses Tallarico's economic arguments entirely. I mean, if Paxton can shift the debate from the cost of groceries to the chaos at the southern border, he doesn't have to defend his own record. He just triggers the voters' partisan defense mechanism.
That's the power of culture war attacks. They are incredibly efficient.
They really are.
They don't require the voter to read a white paper or parse through competing economic plans. If Paxton successfully defines Tallarico as fundamentally anti-gun or pro-open borders using, say, older legislative votes or just the national party platforms,
Tallarico instantly becomes culturally radioactive to a moderate Texan.
Instantly.
Yeah.
And he's anchoring this strategy to the biggest partisan magnet in the state, Donald Trump.
Right.
The report highlights that Trump even flew in for an August 27th Houston fundraising appearance for Paxton.
Oh, wow. So bringing in the big guns.
Yeah. It's a pure base consolidation play. Paxton is pushing for 90% plus Republican consolidation.
Yeah.
If he hits that number, all of Tallarico's summer ad spending basically evaporates.
It becomes mathematically impossible for Tallarico. The structural deficit is just too large to overcome without significant crossover support. Well, let's actually dig into that structural deficit.
Yeah.
Because abstract theories about permission structures and partisan magnets, they eventually have to hit the dirt of the electoral map.
You do?
How does a Democrat actually piece together a win in a state with 254 counties?
Well, the report lays out the geography, and it essentially requires an additive miracle across multiple distinct regions simultaneously.
A miracle, huh?
Pretty much. Decades ago, Democrats thought they could win just by driving up massive turnout in the urban cores.
You know,
Houston, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio.
Right, the blue cities.
But the state has grown so much that urban turnout alone is mathematically insufficient. Tallarico has to hit very specific, aggressive benchmarks in three other distinct zones.
Okay, let's start with the suburbs, because that's where the national realignment has really happened over the last decade.
Yeah, and the suburban math is steep. Take Tarrant County, which includes Fort Worth. It went for Trump by about 5 points in 2024.
Okay.
For Tallarico to win statewide, he has to flip Tarrant County entirely and win it slightly.
That's a big lift.
It is. And beyond that, in the historically deep red, affluent suburbs, places like Collin and Denton counties north of Dallas, he has to drastically compress the Republican margins.
Compress them how much?
He needs to pull those R plus 15 or R plus 20 margins down to the low single digits.
Wow. He needs those college-educated suburbanites, the exact people who might have voted for Nikki Haley or John Cornyn in a primary, to completely abandon Paxton?
Exactly.
But what about South Texas? Because the Rio Grande Valley has been a massive flashing warning sign for Democrats recently.
It has. And it's the second critical piece of the puzzle, the Latino rebound. Places like Hidalgo and Cameron County shifted hard to the right in 2024.
He really did.
Working class Latino voters have shown a real willingness to back Republicans down there, particularly on economic and border security issues. Tallarico desperately needs to reverse that trend.
He can't just break even there, right?
No, he needs a double-digit statewide Latino margin to offset the inevitable massive losses he's going to take in rural Texas. That's why he's been doing border tours and flooding Spanish-language media with ads heavily focused on wages and inflation, just trying to rebuild that trust.
Which brings us to the rural firewall. East, Central, and West Texas, they are going to vote overwhelmingly Republican. The report is completely blunt about that.
Absolutely.
Democrats aren't going to magically start flipping rural townies. So if Tallarico is dedicating resources to a county he knows he's going to lose, is the strategy basically just trying to bleed slower?
In a way, yeah.
Like if he moves a rural county from an R+60 margin down to an R+40 margin, does that actually make a dent in a statewide race?
It makes a massive dent. We tend to get hyper-focused on the color of a county on a map. You know, did it flip from red to blue?
Right. We all stare at those election night maps.
But in a statewide race, there are no electoral votes by county. It's a pure popular vote. Margin management is the entire ballgame.
So it's strictly a volume game?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's look at the mechanics of it. Say a massive rural county typically gives the Republican candidate a net advantage of 20,000 votes.
Okay.
That's a 20,000 vote hole Tallarico has to dig out of using his urban base.
Mm.
But if Tallarico campaigns in that rural county, focuses on local issues like the closures of rural hospitals or funding for public schools, and manages to cut that net advantage down to 15,000 votes.
He didn't win the county, but he just netted 5,000 votes toward his statewide total.
Exactly. Mathematically, shaving 5,000 votes off a rural deficit is literally the exact same value as gaining 5,000 votes in a competitive Dallas suburb.
It is identical. That makes so much sense.
And this is the fatal flaw for Democrats in past cycles. If rural and exurban Republican turnout hits its normal massive margins, I mean, if they are casually hitting 70 or 80% in these massive swaths of the state,
then nothing else matters.
Right. That rest of state vote will completely swamp any incremental gains a Democrat makes in Houston or Dallas. Tallarico has to stop the bleeding in rural Texas, or his suburban permission structure just won't matter.
So pulling all these threads together for you listening, the landscape in Texas right now is genuinely volatile. The national forecasters moving this to a toss-up aren't hallucinating. The data supports it.
It really does.
But Tallarico's path to actually winning is extraordinarily conditional. He doesn't just need a good night. He needs a very precise, perfectly calibrated storm.
He needs all the variables to break his way simultaneously.
He needs that $68 million war chest to continue translating into effective, unanswered messaging.
Right.
He needs Paxton's primary wounds to stay open so the Republican base remains fractured.
Yeah.
And he needs to overperform the 2024 Democratic baseline in the suburbs, rebound significantly with Latino voters in the Rio Grande Valley, and successfully execute defensive margin management in rural Texas, all at the exact same time.
And he has to sustain all of that while absorbing the inevitable, massive, late-stage barrage of negative advertising designed to brand him as a generic, far-left national Democrat.
It's a tall order. Whether you are voting in Texas this November or watching from across the country, this race is an absolute masterclass in modern political strategy.
It truly is.
It is the ultimate stress test. We are watching a live experiment to see if a hyper-customized, highly localized candidate with a massive financial advantage can actually break the gravitational pull of national partisanship.
It's the ultimate test of candidate execution versus structural party brand.
But I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over, looking slightly beyond the mechanics we've discussed today. The source report is clear that Tallarico-ist messaging relies heavily on a populist, anti-billionaire frame, right?
Yes, very heavily.
He is aggressively pitching himself as the champion of the working class against mega donors. Yet to broadcast that message, his campaign is currently benefiting from staggering influxes of national money.
Staggering.
And we know millions more are about to pour in from super PACs on both sides.
Oh, the volume of outside spending is only going to escalate as November approaches.
Oh, right. So could this overwhelming volume of out-of-state cash eventually backfire on everyone? What happens to the electorate when Texas voters start to realize that their local Senate race has effectively been hijacked?
Right, like it's serving as a proxy war for national billionaires and super PACs from New York to California.
Exactly. We've talked extensively about margin management and building psychological permission structures, but at a certain point, does the sheer saturation of money, I mean, the unescapable barrage of television ads, the flooded digital feeds, the constant text messages, does it cease to persuade?
It raises a really vital question about the threshold of voter fatigue.
Yeah.
When does a multimillion-dollar messaging advantage stop being an asset and start becoming a repellent.
Could the sheer toxicity and volume of it all end up alienating and suppressing the crucial independent voters both candidates desperately need?
It's a fascinating paradox. You need millions to build the bridge, but the weight of all that money might just collapse it anyway.
We'll have to see if this carefully engineered strategy can actually defy gravity, or if the Texas red wall ultimately holds firm. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.